This is Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My guest is radio host and co-founder of the popular public radio show Snap Judgment, which can be heard each week on this public radio station, Sunday mornings at 11 and Monday evenings at 7. Glenn, welcome to Lifestyles.
Super great to be here.
Before creating Snap Judgment, you had a very decorative past career as an educator, actor, community activist, political strategist, and according to a website, you have composed music, rocked live spoken word poetry in Detroit, joined a band in Indonesia, written screenplays, painted self-portraits, released a blues album. What haven't you done, and are all these things true?
No, they're all lies. Yes, they're all true, and I've had an interesting road of it. I think that was kind of the genesis of Snap Judgment in the first place.
Will you talk a little bit about your background and the history of Snap? How did Snap Judgment find its way to public radio?
Well, that's a crazy story in and of itself. I'm a big public radio fan from when I was a little kid, even sitting in the back seat of the car. And later, like about this was a while back ago now, but there was a contest. And there was a contest saying, are you hosting? And I heard some of my public radio heroes, Terry Gross and Ira Glass and a few others, they were talking about this contest on this early sort of public radio invention that was podcasting back 12 years ago. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go ahead and send in my clip just to preserve my right to complain. To make a long, very, very, very long story short, that contest, I won it, and eventually got to start Snap Judgment.
Wow, and so what did you submit as your material that you would actually win over so many others that I would imagine have submitted? What did you send in?
Well, the first entry actually was for a show that I labeled at the time called Snap Judgment, and it was about a guy walking down the street in Oakland, California, where I live, and he'd just been released from prison. And he promised himself two different things. He promised him, number one, he was never going back. And number two, he was never going to be anybody's punk. He went to a check cashing place, got his last $150, and was walking back to sleep on a friend's couch when he heard someone pull the trigger of a gun behind him. He said, I saw you get that money, man. I saw you get that money. Hand it over. What do you do? Snap judgment. And that story was based on a true story in Oakland, and I just put that into my little clip, put a little bit of music underneath it, and sent it off and forgot about it. And that kind of started the whole thing.
Wow, that's a great story. You've told other stories like that on the series. Was it that particular? Did you go back and do that story in detail, or because it sounds vaguely familiar?
The original story was an amalgam of actually two or three different stories. We try to do on Snap now is really be real. Well, what really happened to one person, one single person, one single time? The thing that I always noticed about stories that I like was that at some point, somebody has to do something that they are not prepared for.
Right.
You got to take a chance. You have to make a leap up, right, left, down, whatever it's going to be. And that kind of was the energy behind Snap Judgment.
Got it. You know, it wasn't until you just told that story right now that I actually got the idea of why the name is Snap Judgment. I didn't put that together until right now. And I listened to the show, and I've listened to it for a few years now. So I'm a little slow on the uptake on that one. Tell me a little bit of the making behind the scenes of Snap Judgment. Can you share the process? Like, do you always have stories in production and your group comes together and say this week, or how far ahead? Give me a little bit of the background if you can.
Sure. So it takes about, on average, between 3 and 6 months to make a Snap Judgment story.
Wow.
I think that people are surprised to learn, like, you know, a 10 or 15 minute story might have hours and hours and hours of people gathering tape and gathering voices and trying to figure out what that story is all about, and putting it in a way that we think is going to be moving for the audience that hears it. It's a lot of, I have a team of genius eye that work on this stuff, and they always amaze me. The pitch room itself, when we first start, that's how every single story starts with a pitch. And people would be surprised to learn that most of my own stories on my own show don't make it through the pitch process. So which annoys me to no end. But I'm serious when I tell someone who's trying to pitch to us, if at first you don't succeed, please, please try again.
Hmm.
We're really trying to make stuff. This whole idea of cinema of sound, that storytelling with the beat, I think a revolution that kind of happened unnoticed in my world when we've gone through kind of this headphones revolution. And listening to the show when you're riding down the road or whatever with the kids screaming in the back seat, you're wondering what you're going to put on for dinner and all this other kind of stuff, and some jerks just cut you off in traffic. That's one way to listen to it. But when you put the headphones on, you go into a completely different acoustic space, and it's a space that has not really been fully explored by today's media makers. And I love that we get to play around in that space. It's so intimate, and it's just such an amazing thing that we have right now.
You know, it really is. A lot of times I'm listening to the show while I'm putting my makeup, getting ready on Sunday mornings, and sometimes I'm walking in and out of the room, and so I'm not there totally listening to it all, but I'm catching it. And sometimes, you know, I'm getting ready to empty the trash, and I won't empty the trash because I don't want to leave the bathroom because I want to hear that next part. I don't want to miss anything, because then you'll miss a part of the story and it might not make sense in the end, or I'll have questions. So putting the headphones on and really getting into that space is a much better way to listen to it. You know, I was going to say, many of the stories or many of the segments do open up with a Glenn Washington story or experience. Why did you decide to share so much of your family story?
I wanted there to be a touchstone to Snap Judgment where you can always go back to. We're going to tell some amazing, incredible stories from all over the world, but I wanted to ground it in somebody who, you know, I've had some crazy things, but I don't think my life is any more crazy than anyone else's.
Really?
Not really. No, I think that a lot of people have stories to tell.
Okay.
And you know, this is what's interesting to me about the whole deal. It's like when we first started Snap. Yeah, you know, I've got a few stories where I've dived into the alley where the Yakuza are having a gunfight above me when I'm trying to crawl through a bridge, something like that. I got a few of those.
Yes.
I don't have enough. We're in season 10 at this point. Those stories have been used up. The stories that I seem to have resonance for the broader audience that I tell don't have those crazy fact patterns. They're stories about, you know, me relating with my son, or me dealing with insomnia, or panic attacks, something that is honestly very small, those things, but I think relatable.
Sure.
Because I'm not swinging for those crazy fact patterns anymore. These are regular stories from regular people, dramatically told.
Absolutely.
And they have huge import for the person telling them. But if you look at the actual fact pattern, they might not be that, you know, intense. In fact, a little while ago, we just had one of the best storytellers, I think, in the land, best performance storytellers in the globe, Josh Healy. We're having this little joke, and he's like, can you tell a story about crossing a street that will have import with someone? And he took that challenge, and his story, he didn't exactly tell that story, but he told a story, and I kid you not, the fact pattern is, I took my nephew to a water park, and he went down a water slide. That's the fact pattern. But when you hear him tell this story, good Lord, it's an amazing journey. And he takes us on a ride, and it's a ride that I did not see coming. And that's why I'm really, really serious about this. Don't think that you have to speak 15 languages and travel around the globe and in order to have a story that matters. You do not. And Josh Healy's story, I believe it's called California Burning, if you look it up, that proves it.
So I was going to ask, you know, what topics do you enjoy sharing on the show? Are there themes that you know that if you're going to touch on that theme, you're going to get good content to make a show? But I'm kind of hearing you just describe that it can be anything, and it's really about the storytelling of it.
It is. We try to, number one, we're scratching our own curiosity. Where does the itch lead us? And that's the whole thing. Do you have a passion for the story that you're telling? Is there a reason why you're telling it? That ends up being the most important thing of all. When someone wants to tell us a story, they might not know why. That's not necessarily their job. Mm. It's our job as producers to figure out what is the passion behind this piece, what happened, and how can we constructed so that it hits someone else in both the heart and the mind.
Absolutely.
You know, that was a lot of the issue that went into founding Snap Judgment in the first place was, number one, I didn't hear a lot of people who sounded like me on public media at the time.
Right.
And I also thought that we can aim at two places. Public radio is smarter than any other radio out there, but we can also aim at the heart as well.
Mm.
Because I know for myself, I was watching Crossfire back in the when we first started the show, and you have two people that are yelling at each other on TV, and no one has ever changed their mind about anything ever in the history of time from watching that show. But if you have someone tell you a story about what this happened to me, people change their minds all the time by listening to someone's narrative. And we wanted the show to be as smart as anything. We also wanted to hit the heart, because that gives you, the impetus to get up and do something about it.
After a quick break, I'll continue my conversation with the host of Snap Judgment, Glenn Washington. You can hear his show each Sunday morning at 11 or Monday nights at 7 right here on KVCR. And since this is our Halloween show, when we come back, we'll dive into his spook series and meet Mrs. Hagstrom. She's not like Casper, the friendly ghost, which is what I prefer. Instead, she's a mean ghost. Stay with us. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My guest is Glenn Washington, host and producer for the popular public radio show and podcast Snap Judgment. You know, this is our Halloween show, so I wanted to dive into your spooked series. Do you like Halloween, or do you just like scary scenarios?
See, it's funny. I grew up in a crazy cult, and Halloween was forbidden to me.
Oh.
We were not allowed to celebrate Halloween. But it was always, I always envied everybody else who could with the costumes and the candy and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And so, when I got Snap Judgment, the only idea behind the original spooked episode was, let's take people's supernatural experience as seriously as we take any other story they tell us. The only thing that we're asking is that the person who's telling us the story believes what they're saying.
Mm.
Now, when someone does that, we don't want a crazy person. And some people, they'll just say, if you have one or two ghost stories, cool. If you have 60, that's probably not exactly who we want to speak to. The best stories come from someone who says something like this. Look, I don't even want to tell anybody about this. But someone says that to me, my ears go out. What's going on? Mm. What are they going to say? The person who is already skeptical of their own story, who knows how crazy they sound,
right,
who is based and who's rooted in the real world and logic. And sometimes those stories, they have multiple people who can tell the same crazy story. Those are the ones that we love on Spook. And because it's one of those things where if I'm telling you a crazy story, I want to hear from a crazy person, but I want to be able to say, even if I don't believe in supernatural, whatever it is, I'm a man of science, I'm a woman of math, but I don't think that person's lying either.
Right.
I think we can hold two different contradictory ideas in our head at the same time, and that's what spooks all about.
And I think it's because it feels like it's coming from the heart rather than the idea of trying to scare me. But let me just talk about Mrs. Hagstrom.
Yeah.
Here's a clip from the Spook series featuring the story of Mrs. Hagstrom.
One of the first incidents that happened was actually to me. It was a hot summer evening. I was home alone with my mother. I had gone upstairs to change into my pajamas. I was walking down the stairway. I'm about halfway down when I can feel what feels like a bony hand touch my back. There was a terrible smell on the stairway at the time that it happened. My heart started beating, and about halfway down, before I could grab the railing, it gave me a firm shove and pushed me down the stairs. I looked back at the empty stairs, and then I ran into the kitchen where my mother was doing the dinner dishes. I was sobbing. I tried to tell her what had happened. She would have no reason to believe at this point that I was literally pushed down the stairs. She looked at me carefully, making sure I was okay, looking over me like a mother would, and then gave me a hug. She's like, "Oh, it was just an accident. I think you're okay." A couple months later, I was also walking down the stairs. I could feel somebody behind me. I could sense that there was somebody behind me, and then the cold, bony hand in my back. But this time it wasn't just a gentle shove. This time it was a full-on, forceful push. And this time I went down the stairs pretty hard, hitting the bottom. My parents heard me hit the floor. They came running. I insisted that I felt a bony hand. There was something breathing on me before it happened. It was smelly and scary. My parents kind of looked at each other. They probably had no idea what was actually happening. But just a few months after we moved in, pretty much everybody had sensed something or heard something or seen something at that point.
This story is told well. It left me wanting more, and I wanted questions answered like, why did they stay in the home? How many years did the family live with her? I wanted to know more details, and I really enjoyed the way the author, or the man that told the story of his life, told it. And there's so many others. I mean, you know them all. But I don't like scary things, and I stayed to my radio in my bathroom until the end, and then I listened to it again on a thumb drive. I put it in my car so I could hear the whole thing again. And with him telling it, I can visualize her. I can see it all. I can see the stairs. I can see everything. And I don't like spooky things, and I guess I don't like things frightening me or jumping out at me. But Mrs. Hagstrom is a great story.
Well, I'll just say this about spooked. This is not a show of, these stories are not about gore or even necessarily even surprise that you would consider like, oh, this is a horror story. This is a story to scare me.
Right.
These are stories about belief. What do you believe? What do you think happened? When you touch some aspect of the supernatural, where you believe you do, how do you feel about that? And do you question yourself? We're saying that people have these experiences all the time, and you can discount them if you want to, but people make decisions based upon those experiences they have. They build, they move from one city to another. They marry or divorce their spouse. They decide to have another kid or they don't. They make huge life-changing decisions on these stories. And so And that's why they're important. And we want to tell them those stories the way that the person themselves experienced them.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, we're not going to have mummies jumping up out the floorboards and blood spurting all over the place. That's not really what happens. The best ghost stories, the best supernatural stories, the world is not 100% different than the world that you inhabit. It's a little bit different. Mm. You feel like an unseen hand. Maybe you see a golden eye. It's just one thing that changes. And what is your relationship to that supernatural element introduced into your world? That's what we're talking about. That's where our storytelling comes from.
Where do you get your guests and find them to tell the story? Are they all go to your website and make their pitch? Is that where you get all your guests, or do you find some others in different locations?
Now we have to really look. We have to go and talk to people. Mm-hmm. But think about it, though. If you go on the street right now and say, tell me your best ghost story to anybody, they might have one, or they might be able to tell you someone who does, or they might turn you towards your grandmother or someone else. Everyone's monsters are born from their own experience. And every culture, every community, every person has something big, particularly are afraid of. And we want, oftentimes, you know, by examining these monsters, we get a look at communities and cultures and from a perspective that we might not otherwise have been able to do so. When I tell a story from North Africa, it's going to be similar but different at the same time from a story that happens in Mexico. The monsters are different. The djinn, the genie, which are demons in North Africa, are going to be very, very different from the demons that someone sees in Oaxaca, Mexico. And I want to know why.
Who's your audience?
Our audience, I love this. This is what I love. Every morning, I take a carpool of a bunch of young kids to school in the morning. I'm going to ride. And generally, I'm the DJ, and the podcasts are my vinyl. And what I love about it is, so far, out of all the podcasts that I've played for them, including Snap Judgment, their favorite is Spooked.
Really?
I love this. I love that, because I love that they can listen to it. And when I pull up to the school and nobody gets out of the car because they want to hear how that story ends, I know I got them. And I know this, too, that I get letters from people who play it, these stories in nursing homes. They play it sometimes in hospitals. Hmm. They play it in universities. I love that everybody loves a good ghost story. So when you say who the audience is, I think it's anybody who likes to sit around a campfire and say and ask what happened next.
It's almost like on your carpooling to school, they're driveway moments, but with the young kids. So they're
right.
Invested and engrossed into the story.
I love giving narrative to you. I think the best thing in the world that you can give to young kids is, you know, a sense of narrative, a sense of drama. These words matter, and I ask them, do you believe it? And they're always like, I don't know. And I don't care whether they believe it or don't believe it.
Right.
I just want to know that it's got them.
Do you have some favorite episodes of Snap, either Spooked or Snap in general?
I think that there's a story that the Voice in the Woods, which is one of my favorite spook stories, for sure. We did an episode called Creepy Crawly, and there's a story about that Raven Christian, who was a regular Snap contributor, but this time he went in kind of a different way. He told about himself and his kids and raising pigeons. I just think it's a beautiful, beautiful story. It's a spook story, but again, this is not a masked clown chasing the college students around the woods. This is very, very different.
What, if anything, at this point, would listeners be surprised to know about you? You share so much of you. Is there anything that they'd be surprised to know about you?
I think I've talked a lot about belief. I think that I grew up in a crazy, end-of-days, apocalyptic, white supremacist Jesus cult. And growing up, I was told that the world was going to come to an end any moment, that we had to be ready. Some of the people in my group, they went to bed with their shoes on so they would be ready in case Jesus came back in the night. Getting that close to, I think, a radical belief has really kind of changed the way that I saw the world, I think, forever. And if people would be surprised about anything, it's that I still believe, I think that that experience still impacts the storytelling that I do. It's not something I completely can reject. I still think that the same tools that would put someone in a seat even after Jesus does not return are the same tools that we use right now to make narrative work in a way that actually moves people. And I don't want to start anybody's cult, but I do acknowledge that these tools have power.
What are you teaching your kids? Are they going to be storytellers?
I think they're going to. I know they've got a little bit of it in them because they're always telling me nonsense. But I know they're going to be story listeners. I think that you'll be surprised. Oftentimes, when we think of a storyteller, it's someone who's always running their mouth about whatever it may be. But when you think about, like, the storytellers of our day on public media, the Ira Glasses, the Jad Abumrads, even the Terry Gross, these are people who you'll be surprised when you meet them. They're not just running their mouths, but they are listening. They're listening to every single word. You see them kind of move forward when they find someone who's telling them a story that they are really intrigued by. They're almost universally have a bit of introversion about themselves, not extroverts.
Right.
That's where they get their energy from.
Can you, as we close the show, do your opening, you know, how you do it, storytelling with a beat? You know,
sure.
I can't do you, but can you do you?
You're listening to Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat.
Thank you, Glenn Washington. I appreciate your time and look forward to more stories coming our way.
We can't wait for y'all to hear. We're working on them right now. Cannot wait.
Snap Judgment airs each week on KVCR Sunday mornings at 11 and Monday nights at 7. To hear the full segment of Mrs. Hagstrom as part of the spooked episode, go to our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on Today's Show. There'll be a link there that'll take you to the spooked website where you can listen to a slew of spook stories. That's our Halloween show, so what are your plans for Halloween night or the Halloween weekend? As for me, I'll be taking my grandson out for his first trick-or-treat adventure. Make good choices this Halloween season. Watch the kiddos in costumes. And it never hurts to have a flashlight while walking in the neighborhood. Be aware of the blue jack-o'-lanterns this season, as they are meant to raise awareness of the nonverbal children who may be trick-or-treating, or it might be a child with autism. Let's be kind and limit the scary things, especially if I knock on your door. That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez on your streaming service and take the show on the go. If you have a topic or an idea for a segment, leave me a message at our website, you know it, kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. Thanks to all who helped to make the show possible, including Sharina Wad, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.